Welcome back to Hashtag Black. I'm Stephanie Shonikon. I teach in the Department of Black Studies and School of Music at the University of Missouri. And almost every week, I meet with some of my wonderful students to hash out the hashtags that frame Black life. So today, I've just got two of my favorites.
Marshall Allen, senior double major in political science and Black studies.
And Kennedy Moore, senior double majoring in communication and Black studies.
All right, so Black studies in the house. So today we're going to start with the hashtag, the opioid crisis. And this came to our attention because on October 26th, President Trump announced that he would call a public health emergency because of the opioid crisis. And clearly, there's been a lot of discussion about how different the response to this crisis is from what happened 20 years ago with the quote-unquote war on drugs. So, Marshall, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, so reading an article this morning called Race, the Crack Epidemic, and the Effect on Today's Opioid Crisis, Delene Glanton, Chicago Tribune. She says, I remember another drug epidemic that began in the 1980s. Back then, we weren't so sensitive about what we call people who use crack cocaine. So essentially, like most things, you see this difference between Black criminality and white criminality, how white folk tend to be victims framed in the media or framed by other people, victims of oppression or circumstance, stuff like that, versus Black people who tend to be like the villains behind it. You know, they're stuck on crack because they choose to, you know, they're just completely immoral and stuff like that. She also says if crack addiction had been treated like a national crisis rather than a neighborhood vice, we'd have a better understanding today of how drugs spread through populations. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty important, too, because as we know, you know, FBI, CIA both sanctioned and allowed for drugs to be sent into the Black communities and stuff like that in order to make sure that we could dismantle, like, leaders like the Panthers, mm-hmm. Dismantle other Black leaders and movements and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So putting crack and putting drugs in the Black community specifically was beneficial. And then we see stuff similar to that as far as like sentencing and stuff, like Michelle Alexander, the new Jim Crow, how there's a difference between how the drugs are used and how they're processed, which targets the majority of Black people or even the condemnation of Blackness. Khalil Gibran Muhammad, he talks about the sentencing structure in specificity,
right.
And how everything, even as small as suspect, mm-hmm. right, would be enough to properly condemn Black folks. So.
Okay, all right. So very complex, but clearly there's a difference between the way it's being dealt with now and the way that it was dealt with a few years ago. I like that you mentioned some of the scholars who have talked about this, right? So when we see the president come out on October 26th and take on this posture, it comes as no surprise.
Right. What about us?
Right. Kennedy?
Hey, you just named some of my fave books. Those are like really good pieces of literature on these topics. But I agree. Like it's really like just kind of classist and like the glamour of it. It's like, you know, it's easy to pop a pill. It's glamorous to pop a pill. And, you know, that's associated with whiteness. But, mm-hmm. you know, crack cocaine is not like a glamorous drug to use necessarily. There is a difference. And I think what it really takes is for the government and all of this nation to like understand that any type of drug addiction shouldn't be criminalized. First of all, like it should be taken seriously. Instead of putting people in prison, we should be putting people in rehab for these situations, because criminalizing them isn't doing anything. It's just allowing the government to profit off of their struggles.
Especially when both of them are sanctioned by the government. Exactly. You get one from prescription and the other one was underhanded, but it was still mm-hmm. sanctioned and allowed by the government.
Mm-hmm. And so we are not saying that the focus on public health is a problem. I think that's great, right?
Absolutely.
That's what it should always have been. We're just, I think a number of us across the country are just asking the question about the racial implications of the difference in response. One, a war on drugs, get tough on crime, those kinds of sound bites. And then the other one, rehabilitation, healthcare.
The victims of...
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Victims versus criminals. Mm-hmm. All right. This is not a hashtag, but I just wanted to slide in Meek Mill real quick. Hashtag Meek Mill, which is one that somebody was telling me about yesterday. Kennedy, do you have anything to say about that by
yeah.
way of thinking about these harsh sentences that Marshall mentioned?
Yeah, so just really looking at social media about the Meek Mill story, really just at what people are really talking about is how he's essentially been sentenced to prison for breaking his probation or whatever the case may be. He's been sentenced more time than rapists have been sentenced. Like, it's kind of ridiculous that, like, what was the crime that he even committed? I'm not
Some,
sure.
Guns and maybe drugs.
So that's more... The government is saying that's more time, worth more time you being in prison than raping somebody. Or...
And keep in mind, he did serve his time.
Right.
So this is just the violation of his probation.
Right.
Which is not just. I mean, he should not violate. But yeah. He was, I think the judge was, it's a questionable case because the judge was advised by the assistant district attorney as well as his probation officer not to give him time, and yet he still gives him time, and he gave him like what he gave him a lot of time. I can't remember how much, but
2 to 4 years.
2 to 4 years. Wow. What's behind that, right? So Marshall, do you have anything to say about Meek Mill, or should we just move on?
Yeah, so I mean, it's pretty much the same thing. How like the difference in black criminality and white criminality, how the two are not held on the same pedestal. When reading some of these articles, it looked as if the judge had already had an ought against Meek Mill in the first place, as if almost like a score to settle, like, I'm going to get you yet, right? But just like Kennedy brought up, other acts of crime or illegal activity that happens, whether in Hollywood or on a local basis, it's not looked at the same. You know, we've known of plenty of white celebrities who violate their probation and are not sentenced 2 to 4 years, right? They're given, what, house arrest, if that, right? But it also speaks to the larger understanding of, like, hip-hop culture and black culture as well, too, that in order to be a rapper, you know, you have to be a criminal. They must be a criminal, so put them in jail, right? Not excusing what he did, mm-hmm. you know. If you have a probation, clearly, in the eyes of the law, it's something that you have to follow. And it should make even more sense to you being a black man, being a black person, knowing of the inequalities, you know, in the justice
right.
system and stuff like that.
Right.
But it's rough. It's rough because you read his story about everything that he went through from the time he was a kid to when he became a rapper, juvie, jail, et cetera, et cetera. He's out. He's going, I don't know, back and forth. But even with his tottering back and forth between staying, quote unquote, clean
mm-hmm.
and then... engaging in those other like criminal or quote unquote illegal activities, right? The thing is not the same. What other celebrities do we follow this closely, right? We don't. We just don't. We don't follow other celebrities as closely.
Mm-hmm,
there are
mm-hmm.
plenty of white celebrities who have guns, who do drugs,
mm-hmm.
And engage in the very same activities, but the spotlight doesn't hit them the way it hits us.
Right. All right. So you brought up the issue of black men and how Meek Mill should have known, right? Like, we've read the books. We've watched 13th by Ava DuVernay, which really focuses in on how the focus is on black men. So let's move to our next hashtag, which is hashtag Michelle Obama, who made a statement last week about how we love our boys, but we raise our girls. And she instructed that we stop babying our boys, our sons. And I took personal issue. It made me think about what her instruction is and whether it was a fair instruction. So neither of you have sons or daughters, but but you are a daughter, Kennedy, and you are a son, Marshall. So what do you think about this? Because I'm conflicted.
So I really just think that I agree with her. You know, society as a whole, we coddle men. Like, we say boys will be boys, and we let them get away with certain things, and we don't hold them accountable. So I really just think, like, her overall intent and what she said was hold men accountable. Like, let's actually really, I don't want to say raise our sons, because I don't want to, you know, say people aren't raising their sons, but let's, you know, show them how to treat each other, show them how to treat women, and how to function without this toxic masculinity in society.
Brilliant.
To me, it sounds just like old conventional wisdom. Like, I read it and laughed because I've heard a lot of elders in the Black community say stuff like that. Like, we raise our daughters, but we coddle our sons, stuff like that. But I'd say the same thing that Kennedy said, was I wasn't taking it along the lines of, like, people aren't raising, you know, their daughters per se.
I know, I was in my field.
But the understanding of, like, the difference in treatment, right? So, New York Times, Women in the World, so they have a, Women in the World is like a little subsection of, like, New York Times or whatever. She says, men have become entitled and self-righteous because society protects them more than it does girls, which we know to be a fact, right? The crimes that men commit, that they do, can always be passed off under some type of jurisdiction. Common understanding, conventional wisdom is not put the same way for women. She also says it's like the problem in the world today is that we love our boys, we raise our girls. We raise them to be strong. Sometimes we take care not to hurt them, and I think we pay a little bit for that. And then last but not least, so y'all should get some of your friends. She laughed, pointed them in the audience. Y'all need to go talk to each other about your stuff because there's so much of it. Talk about why y'all are the way they are. You are. And so, like, reading her article and reading through her quotes, I would have to agree, and this is why. So when you first start in Black feminism and feminism in general, you learn about, you know, patriarchy and heterosexism, misogyny, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But then you also learn about one of the most evils behind feminism, not behind feminism, but behind, like, the concept of patriarchy, misogyny, stuff like that. And you find out that a lot of that stuff, mm-hmm. Not a majority of it, right, but a lot of that does come from women. And I think this is what Michelle Obama was getting at. It's not a matter of women understand, of women, you know, having more investment in men, but she's talking about the internalized sexism, which in turn makes implicit enablers of women, mm-hmm. to put men in general in a higher standing than them, right? So, for one, you can't have Black men without Black women. It just can't happen, right? Because all Black men have to come from Black women. But the way patriarchy, misogyny, heterosexism, heteronormativity, et cetera, is set up is designed, right, to make sure that men continue to be at the top of the social hierarchy.
Right.
And I think that's what Michelle Obama is getting at when she says, you know, women have a part to play in that.
Right.
Because whether or not, you know, the minds of Black women have become decolonized or they understand how systems work and stuff like that, a lot of the stuff they do have to deal with on a more personal, individual level is that implicit and that internalized sexism, that internalized misogyny, that internalized heteronormativity, which they unknowingly project onto their boys, onto mm-hmm. men when mm-hmm. they grow up, when they raise them and stuff like that, which helps to contribute to,
right,
you know, the system. Not saying that women by any means mm-hmm. are the cause of patriarchy, misogyny, mm-hmm. heteronormativity, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But because it is so thick, because patriarchy and those different terms are so strong,
right
after a while, you do have women, just like Black people in racism, who do internalize it and eventually begin to believe it, which will then go forth and be put, you know, onto boys and onto men.
Okay. I have to admit, I mean, so these two arguments that you've offered are compelling. I get that. I do have to say, though, that because I know that my son's journey in this country, at this time will be different from my daughter's journeys. I have conversations with him that may be a little bit different from the ones I have with my daughters, right? So, you know, like the usual conversation about when the police stops you and so on. That's a conversation that's different that I tweak, right? And so there is a difference, I think, with the conversations that we have with our boys versus our girls. But yes, generally on a broad scale, I get where she's coming from and why this is so important. I was just watching again the Spike Lee film, which we are going to show at the University of Missouri on Monday, as a way of commemorating the events, the student movement of 2015. And in watching it again, so I'm previewing it because we're going to show it. I want to make sure it was all there. But it reminded me of how much work the women put into it. Right?
Exactly. And something that might not show up in any articles was that was the stipulation that Deshaunya Ware, Storm Irvin, Ayanna Poole made for Spike Lee when he came down. They said, you're not making this documentary unless you center it on black women.
Yes.
And that's also what I think that Michelle Obama was getting at when she was talking about that, right? Women are the forefront of every movement. You cannot have a social justice movement in this country without women. And then in the black community, women have been, the forefront of it. They don't get the credit, of course, because of patriarchy, but they have been the forefront of it. And that's what she's talking about. You know, black women are the highest educated, quote unquote, minority, and let me not even say minority, minoritized, marginalized group, you know, in the world right now. You know, black women have all of these different leadership positions. They do just fine on their own, right? They have a buying power that is competitive, right, to that of the community itself, right? So you have this knowledge and you see what black women are doing, right? And then that reverse, right, which is just, and there's a lot of different factors that you can talk towards it, but that reverse, when you have black men and you know, saying in the system and black women in the poverty and stuff like that, like that's what she's getting at, you know, and especially with that, even on a historical level, not so much contemporary, when you look at all of the things that Dr. King did and stuff like that, you'll find, you know, with a deeper understanding of history, deeper understanding of archival information, that a lot of his initiatives came from black women that don't get the credit, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's just it.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're going to shift a little bit to entertainment, one lighter and one a little heavier, and then we'll be wrapping up. So the first one under entertainment is the hashtag Harvey Weinstein. And I brought it to our little desk here because the only person he denied, of whose claims he denied, was Lupita Nyong'o. He didn't deny the claims of any of the other actresses. So just briefly, Kennedy, what's your thought on this? What does this tell us?
I think it tells us that, not that it's okay, but in a sense, in society, it's okay to rape women, but... You know, if it's a black woman, then, you know, I didn't do it.
So, article this morning, Amy B. Wang, Washington Post, well, she didn't write it this morning, but I was reading it this morning. Harvey Weinstein accused by dozens, specifically disputes Lupita, how you pronounce her
Nyong'o.
Last name. Nyong'o, there we go. Names are important. So, for unknown reasons, she says, Weinstein issued a more specific statement in response to Nyong'o's essay, calling her out by name. First name, and stating, as she had already done in her New York Times piece, that she was one of the ones who invited him to New York. So the problem with that right there is the calling out by name. He specifically made sure to talk about her. So that's the first issue, right? And then the second quote that I got was, while remaining silent on issuing generic denials regarding his more than 40 accusers, Nyong'o is so far the only black woman to have been accused by Weinstein of inappropriate sexual harassment. So, Kylie N. Gross, Colored Amazons, she writes a book about black women and criminality and how it shaped, how black womanhood is shaped or was shaped through this idea of criminality, right? But in the book, she talks about rape, right? And how white men who engaged in sexual activity of any kind with black women were looked at as less of a man, number one, or two, as disgusting, right? And this entire incident right there is a mirror of that particular understanding. Because the fact of the matter is, not only she's the only issue, the only black woman, but he named her out by name, so making her the worst one to come in contact with. Something else is interesting too, in an effort to discourage white men from engaging in any type of sexual activity with black women, the law made sure that it would always be in favor of the black women, of the black woman, not because they valued her, but because they wanted to make sure that white men were properly ridiculed enough to where they would stay away. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is right here. Like, mm-hmm. he had to make sure that he put a, that he named her to make sure that it was the idea was so inconceivable mm-hmm. that it wouldn't happen. And then two, goes back to the historical understanding of black women not being considered women at all, right? So if she wasn't famous, right, the whole incident wouldn't even be considered in the understanding of allegation or rape culture and stuff like that mm-hmm. because historically black women have not been considered, you mm-hmm. know, to be women, to be human for that
right.
matter.
Right. Kennedy.
Yeah, I agree with Marshall. It's just kind of like, you know, I can do this to black women, or I can do this, you know, behind closed doors, but don't let it come out. And it's just like, why is it, you know, what you did was wrong in the first place, but why is it that it can't be a black woman that you did this to? Like, what is so bad about that? What you did was already vile, but you know, you can't associate it with her, and like the fact that you named her, you called her out, and you were just so adamant in saying that, oh, I didn't do this. Like, mm-hmm. this didn't happen. Like, mm-hmm. she's lying. Mm-hmm. And
like this particular yeah. woman, right?
This one. Out of the over 40.
Right. And this it's just one. Like going back to historical, thinking about it historically, black women are always like the liars. Like when it comes to sexual assault or anything like that, it's always like it didn't happen to us, when really and truthfully it happens to us more than it happens to any other type of women, white women, Latino women, Asian women. So, yeah. Hmm.
Something else too, in a larger conversation, especially in a larger conversation, when it comes to sexual violence and rape culture, only 1% out of all the known Only 1% out of all the known accusations and allegations about rape, harassment, sexual violence are false. 1%. Only one. And that's on a nationwide level. So for the that's just in a larger conversation with people saying, oh, well, he didn't. That's fake. They're lying. Really? Because out of 40, 1% of them to be lying, you know.
And he's saying that 1% is the only black woman, right? So he's discrediting her. He is putting a big question mark over her integrity, really, right? But what about all the other 40, right? So let's move on to something a little bit lighter and glorious. So this the Lion King cast was released last week, and we've got some really interesting choices. I personally was delighted, but what do you all think? I know it's not heavy political, but I also think it is heavy political.
I mean, Beyonce's in it, so
that's enough.
That's the cherry on top right there. I think that's what everybody's talking about with this cast is Beyonce, and I honestly don't even remember the other people I saw Beyonce. I'm like, oh, it's lit. But I think people were joking on social media saying that the Migos should play the Hyenas. Or, yeah, I think it was the Hyenas. And I was just like, that should happen. Like, they should make that happen because that would be hilarious.
Okay.
But Lion King, that's near and dear to my heart. I remember when I was a kid and I went to go see it.
Marshall, are you are excited as we are?
No. So
how did I guess?
I've never been a fan of Disney. Never been a fan of Disney whatsoever.
There are some problems with Disney. That's true.
Never been a fan of Disney. Did a breakdown, right? So 2019 cast, black people, right? We have 11 black actors out of 14, but that make up the entire cast, right? Versus 1994, we have 7 black actors and actresses out of the 11 that were originally cast, right? Black Villains 2019, we have two black villains 2019 versus the one 1994. So when you're talking about the racial progress that people were talking about on Twitter or the coming up, when you balance it out, do the averages, it's not really that big of a difference, right? And on a continent where there are supposed to be a majority of black people, and then you look at the numbers and stuff like that. Then you have the whole colorism aspect of Lion King and stuff like that from 1994, right? Where you have all of the lighter characters being the heroic, being the dynamic, et cetera, et cetera. Then you have the evil characters, for one, named Scar. That's cool, right? but him being darker, you have the hyenas who are darker, right? Like, it's... I'm not a fan of Disney, okay, right? And to see the comments on Twitter and stuff like that, and people say, "Oh, well, we moved up, and you know, like it's a more black cast." And not really.
Okay,
you do the averages out; it's the same.
I'm still excited, but all your points are completely valid. Disney has always had a problem with colorism and
racism,
Women, really, yeah,
classism,
yeah,
ableism.
Mm-hmm.
All of it.
so just as a recap, Donald Glover is Simba, which is cool, the childish Gambino. Beyonce is Nala. Chiwetel Ejiofor is Scar. And James Earl Jones will come back as Mufasa. So we look forward to it. We'll see how it all plays out. I hope it does well. I know we love Bae, but I don't know if she's the best actress out there.
She isn't.
Yikes.
Chill on Bae.
Okay, all right.
We know
lastly, we'll just go around. What else are we following?
I follow Tyrese. I don't understand.
Hashtag Tyrese.
It's hard to be.
Break it down in like 1 minute.
It's hard to be. It's hard to be like, oh, he's a good guy. Like, being a man and then looking at famous men, it's hard to be like, hey, like, that's a good guy, because stuff like this comes out. Like, for one, BET released a little segment on him and talking about how reportedly his ex-wife, reportedly, love that, claimed that back in 2007 when she was pregnant with her child, he burst into her bedroom after midnight, poured water on her, and proceeded to punch her 8 times all over the body. Next article, Tyrese melted out of a court case and fired shots at The Rock. And this one disturbed me because they said he flew a banner over his daughter's school declaring his love for her and later dedicated Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On to her, the 10-year-old. I just wanted to take a shower because that was just gross, right? Mm-hmm. You could have used Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder. That was not the song to do that to. Granted, it might have been, oh, well, this is the next song I'm singing publicly, so I'm dedicating my next performance, but it's gross. But it's, I don't know, it's just rough because how?
And he's all over the news.
All over the news.
Midterms and exams.
Yeah, that's what I've been following this week. Midterms, 2 exams.
I hear you.
All of that.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about Play the Part. Our girl Kennedy here
came in
third.
Carefree Kid
Beautiful rendition of Mary J. Blige. She was gorgeous up on that stage.
Thank you. Your voice
was on point. But for me, I'd like to mention hashtag 2 years later again. Black Studies is stepping up to commemorate the events of 2015. We invite everybody out 5 o'clock Monday, November 13th, to come out and help us remember and commemorate what our students did for all of us. I'm already getting hate mail, so I know that that what the students did was justified.
Hate
if
mail?
2 years later, I'm getting emails this morning reacting to the fact that we're doing an event. So clearly what our students were saying about feeling racism around them is true. So thank you for the person who sent me that email for reminding us that what our students did was completely on point. All right. So that's it for today. I hope folks come out on Monday night. And if not, just come back to hashtag black and we'll probably talk about it. So thank you.